All right. Good afternoon, everyone. This is Jaime Guerra with UT Austin. The time now is 1:30 p.m. on October 20th, 2020. I'd like to call to order the Gatton Technical Subcommittee meeting. Sarah, agenda item one, could you lead us through a roll call?
Yes. Bo Kinsey, Travis County.
Present.
Brian Rose, Austin Community College.
Present.
Dane Herbat, Travis County.
Present.
Carlos DeMatos, Gatton.
Present.
Gary Wiesman, Austin Community College.
Present.
Jaime Guerra, UT.
Present.
Bruce Hermes, City of Austin.
Present.
Harold Knoll, UT.
Present.
Steve Pyle, DIR. Frank Ammons, Gatton.
Present.
I'm Sarah Eichelberger with Gatton. Steve Pyle, can you unmute? Well, we still have a quorum, and members of the public are Doug Wilson with JC Communications and Chris Gonzalez with Bricom.
Very good. Thank you, Sarah. Agenda item two, is there any citizen communications, Doug or Chris?
No, sir.
No, sir.
Okay, thank you. Let's move on to agenda item number three. Let's take a few minutes to review and approve the minutes from the regular technical subcommittee meeting from September 15th, 2020 in your handout.
This is Gary Wiesman. Motion to approve the minutes.
All right, we have a motion. This is Jaime. We have a motion. Is there a second? This is Jaime. I'll give it a few more minutes.
This is Dane. Second.
All right, this is Jaime. We have a motion with Gary and a second by Dane. Any further discussion? Hearing none, Sarah, please lead us through another vote.
Gary Wiesman.
Aye.
Steve Pyle. Jaime Guerra.
Aye.
Dane Herbat.
Aye.
Bruce Hermes.
Aye.
John Colemorgan.
Aye.
The minutes are approved.
Thank you. And let the record show that John has joined the meeting as well.
Sarah, this is Steve. I'm here.
Thank you, Steve.
Okay, let's move on in the agenda. Agenda item number four is the maintenance contractor's report. Chris.
Okay, since our last meeting, we've completed inspections of C2 South and D1N with 30 corrective deficiencies between the two rings. There's no anything outstanding to report on the deficiency list itself, just still multiple pending pole transfers that we're steady working through with Austin Energy. Does them know if you have any questions regarding the inspection? If there's no questions, I'll move forward to the inventory report. Please note, reel number R707 we used yesterday, which is 11,500 feet for the C1S TxDOT relocation at 1626. That project was spliced in yesterday and is currently being tested. We also used 485 feet of the City of Austin maintenance reel for a SARS water treatment tie cable repair. Those were the only changes noted on the inventory. Any questions?
All right. This is Jaime again. Hearing no questions, let's move on to the agenda item number 5, Network Manager's Report. 5A is the Gatton Backup NOC status update.
Okay, so we've had some activity with this one. Unfortunately, there's going to be some delay in the beginning of the construction of the NOC as a result, but Sid has been very active with City of Austin and City of Austin attorneys, in particular on the development of the construction plan, which is serving as an agreement for the build out itself. The issue that Public Works has is until the construction plan is in place, executed by both parties, that they cannot issue the contract to Spalglass. So that's going to be a hindrance until we can get it completed. I haven't spoken to Sid about it this week. I did get a message from him in regards to it recently, and I'll be speaking with him this week on it, trying to push that forward. I know he's had some good, what I would consider great conversations with the City of Austin attorneys, and the fact that this will not have to go back to City Council for approval. It's not being considered an amendment to the ILA, so that's good news for us. So it's just a matter of getting them on the same page in agreement and getting it executed. Other than that, from the for a status report on it, I mentioned this previously and it's still the same status. I did get an update that it would be at least 4 weeks away before the convention center has its hazmat permit approved. That's a bare minimum of 4 weeks from now that they can gain approval for it. Once they gain approval for it, IMEG is in the process of submitting the permitting that we need, but they can't submit the permitting that we need until that hazmat permit by the convention center is in place and we can show that it is in place. So that's something we're continuing to work on. I would push it out. We're looking for mid-November. Looking now like it might be more towards mid-December if everything goes well to start this project. And I'm hopeful that we can get it started as soon as possible. Any questions?
Frank, this is Jaime. Is there any limitation on Spalglass's proposal that we need to be aware of, or Sid in City of Austin Legal need to be aware of so that we don't have to start over again?
Yeah, so that's a good question. Let me check with Public Works in the CCO office for the City of Austin to verify that. I don't think typically it'd be 45 days. That's the earliest, but that's a good question. It could be 90 days. It could be 45. I'll find out and circle back to you, Jaime.
Okay.
I can't recall off the top of my head.
Oh, that's fine. And then my other question is it IMEG or TTG you said? I can't remember what they're called now.
IMEG.
IMEG. Are they going to go ahead and fill out the permit applications pending
yes.
that hazmat? So it'll be all ready to go?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay. So they've already been heavily involved. They just got to a stopping point whenever the commission center realized they didn't have the hazmat permit in place. It's going to be a turnkey once we have the hazmat. They just got to do their final. What it is the city permitting office came back and asked for some clarification on a few items within the permits. And so that's good news that, you know, it's in the system. Once once we get that hazmat, they'll submit and be those clarifications and we should be good to go.
Great. Thank you. Does anyone else have any questions for Frank regarding the backup knock? All righty, let's move on the agenda. 5B is the project status report.
For the project status report, there's just a few things to discuss, basically three things if you break them out. So we've had one project that completed yesterday. It's the relocation at 1626 for Travis County with TxDOT. Glad to get that one completed. It's been a long process for that project. That's the only update I have for Gatton Active Projects, and we don't have anything else to update you on other than the UT NOC project that completed recently is listed in there. And then I wanted to just bring you to your attention that we've added two columns here. I believe it's page 2 of 3. Where it begins in the middle of the page. So what we've done is for to try and clear up what projects are driven by Gatton and which projects are driven by developers. There seems to be, you know, we've had questions come up in meetings like how do the members know which is which? So what we've done is we've decided just to break it out. So we have two new columns there, which are Gatton driven future projects. That's sorted by the ring, and then developer driven future projects that are sorted by the developer. So I hope this will help going forward with some of those questions and comments we've received in the past and clear up, you know, immediately who's the distinction between these projects. And that's all I have now for the project status report. If there's any questions, I'll be glad to take them.
Frank, this is Jaime. Is it safe to make the assumption that for developer-driven projects, if Gatton was to delay those, that would impact the network because these developments could, you know, cut into our cables?
Yes, is that a very safe.
Okay.
Yeah, it's. I wouldn't even call that an assumption. That's a real deal.
Okay. It's good to know. So we have this chunk of projects that must go on. All righty. Does anyone have any questions for Frank on projects you see here or other projects that you think should be on here?
Hey Frank, this is Harold. I have a question about the developer-driven future project. I know it's probably really hard to get a sense of the completion dates, but is there any way to forecast that and put it on this list?
That's a good question. So yeah, and you're correct. It is hard to forecast that and get those out. One of the challenges that we face is with most of these developers, I won't call anybody out in particular, the dates move continuously. They'll give us a date and, you know, in my experience, it's always way earlier than, you know, than what actually takes place. It might be two to six months down the road before they're actually ready for us to come in and do our work. So that would be a little challenging as far as a moving target on this. I'd like to just continue announcing what, once we're aware of the dates they've given us as, you know, a tentative start date for construction and a completion date that I announce because you have to remember this, for each project on here, as they come up, we're going to be bringing it to the technical subcommittee and showing how it impacts Gatton. And at that point we would have dates. We could certainly look at adding another column if everybody thinks if the consensus is that would be worth it. It's just, I wouldn't hang my hat on any of the dates we put in there, until these projects actually, are at 100% design completion and they're scheduling work for us. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Any other questions?
Frank, this is Jaime again. Just some corrections on page 3. under entity-specific active projects.
Okay.
The first one you list for UT, the Buckman Mountain Road, that's a future project.
Okay.
And under entity-specific completed projects, there's one for Fire Station 43. It's listed as a UT project. I believe that's a City of Austin project.
It is. Let me see. I was writing down what you were saying about the Buckman.
That would be a future project.
Okay, now I got that. Now, which one is it? Fire Station 43? Where's that listed at? Under
the entity-specific completed projects.
Okay. Yeah, right. City of Austin project. Okay. Yeah, thank you.
Sure. This is Jaime again. Does anyone have any other questions on the project status report? Hearing none, let's move to agenda item 5C, the job budget report.
This is Sarah. Since the previous meeting, I've added one job approved under FRIC spending authority, which is the C2 South dark fiber splicing to activate UT fibers. So that's a total of 29 jobs for FY21, totaling $1.436 million. Of those, we're expecting to recover $270,000. So that would leave $158,000 remaining for additional jobs. And that's all I have.
Thank you, Sarah. This is Jaime. I just wanted to give people a few minutes to review in case they had some questions. All right, doesn't sound like there's any questions. So let's continue on the agenda to agenda item number 6, committee chairperson's update. First item is 6A, Gatton SharePoint site rollout.
Okay, this is Frank. And for this one, there is some questions that have come up in the past. And, you know, the maintenance contractor has struggled this past year in completing the dark fiber testing as requested by Gatton. And what I mean by that is in the nature of how Gatton.
Frank, sorry to interrupt. Are we talking about the SharePoint site?
I'm so sorry. I jumped ahead. I'm sorry about that, everybody.
That's all right.
This is Sarah, and this is my agenda item. I'm going to share my screen now. I've completed the Gatton SharePoint site, and I will be sending out your user ID tomorrow. Let me see. So I'm going to share my screen now. And let me know when you can see it.
This is Jaime, I can see it.
Okay. So I will be sending out your user information tomorrow. I'll be adding you all from the email address I have on file for you as users to the Gatton SharePoint site. If your organization uses Office 365, then you would just log in using your ID that you use for work, your email address and your password. If you're already logged in, it won't prompt you for a password. If your email is not associated with an Office 365 ID, then it will ask you to create a password in order to access the site. So if you have any login issues after I send you the invitation tomorrow, then please let me know. So this is the homepage of the Gatton SharePoint site. And when you log onto this SharePoint site, you'll see the network activity calendar first. And this is going to have everything in the calendar that Carlos sends out through the Gatton alerts. You can actually click on each event and it will give you more information. I'm going to try not to go too fast because I know there's a little bit of a delay between Teams and so scrolling down is the Gatton meeting calendar. It just has all the upcoming meeting dates. So you can see at the top here, there are some bookmarks, and these are the bookmarks that I think you're going to access most frequently. Also on the left-hand side, the sidebar, This will remain there no matter what page you click on, so easy to get to any page. So under audits and testing, and we'll be talking about the dark fiber testing in the next agenda item, but all of those results are here under each entity's folder. You could click on your folder and download your results. And you see at the top here, you just go right back to the previous folder. Down below here, audits and testing, are the splice case audits, the most recent splice case audits for each of the rings. Moving on to the budget page. This is going to have the current year's budget. And down below, we have budgetary documents, which are the approved budgets from the current year and previous years, all of the cost avoidance reports, the budget forecast, fiscal year and budget reports from AISD, and budget historical trends. On the contracts tab, am I going too fast or? Everybody?
This is Jaime, good for me.
Okay.
Yeah, it's going good.
So on the contracts page, you know, we have the document that was posted on the website with the updated contract information, the terms we're in, when they will be brought to the next board meeting or when the next RFP will be issued. Governance and board info. This is where we'll have the contact list, bylaws, ILA, current Gatton insurance policies, and Gatton's policies and procedures, you know, including UFAP and damage claims procedures. Maintenance reports. These are the maintenance reports that BRICOM gives every tech meeting. They'll be housed here. Meeting materials. This is one I know you'll access for every meeting. Also up here at the top, it's labeled as handouts. So you'll download your meeting materials from here. Network issues. We have several trackers, and it may take a while to load when you click on this link. So at the top, we've got an outage tracker. And you can see when you move your mouse over, there may be other columns to the right. You can scroll over. You can export these lists to Excel. Issues encountered during projects. These are unforeseen issues that are encountered during projects. And below we have damage claims. So a variety of trackers under network issues. Then we have network prints. So these will be the most up-to-date CPV, KMZ, and RDLs. Project status and job budget. These are the reports that we give every meeting. We're working on a comprehensive project status / job budget tracker, and that will be in the future. Site list. So I'm working on revamping the site list from the old 1990s spreadsheet to something that's easier to edit and more workable. And so by Friday, I will be posting that here, and I will send out an email, and I will ask you all to upload your responses into the FY22 folder for the site list under entity responses, and I'll make a separate folder for each entity. That way, that doesn't have to get sent out through email, and you could just come in here, download the proposed site list, make your changes, and upload your changes. Then we have standards and allocations. These are the technical guidelines, the strand allocations, and the buffer tube configurations. And that is it. So like I said, I will be sending out your invitations to be a user on the SharePoint site tomorrow. If you have any issues, please let me know.
Guys, this is brilliant.
Yeah, this is Jaime. I agree. This is really detailed and professional and organized. I really like it.
Looks good, Sarah.
Great. Thank you. You know, and, you know, as you go through it, if you have any ideas or suggestions, feel free to email the management team.
Yeah, and this is Frank. I just would like to say that, you know, this stemmed from your request of having a repository location for Gatton data that you can access easier than you have been in the past. And this stems from the SLA request. So, I'm very proud that Sarah was able to get so much of this accomplished. We were able to discuss this together and it came out as well as it did. And it's a living, breathing site that you can use for your own resources.
So I was wondering, so this is going to be our new authoritative source, because I certainly don't want the network management team having to keep up documents on the website and a SharePoint site.
Yes, exactly. This is Sarah. The website, the part that you log into, is going to be retired by the end of the year. As soon as you all are comfortable logging into the SharePoint site and, you know, using this, then I will be retiring the login part of the website.
Okay.
Yeah, so just so you know, we'll be making announcements in regards to that and checking with the entities to make sure they're comfortable with SharePoint and enough of a way for us to start closing out the website that offers similar functions.
Yeah, and like Frank said, this is a living, breathing site. You know, we expect to add to this, that it may evolve into even more than it is right now, into a more collaborative space for members.
So this is Jaime. What items do you still need to maintain actively on the website other than meeting notices, interlocal agreements, policies that are public, I guess?
Only the public part of the website. So that would be posting the meeting notices and the links, you know, which is required by the governor's orders, you know, with softening the Open Meetings Act to allow us to do the teleconference. We are required to post our meeting notices, our call-in information for the meetings, and the recordings and the minutes for the meetings. It's just the login part that I won't need to maintain anymore.
Okay.
You know, unfortunately, SharePoint doesn't have the public-facing websites anymore. I'd be able to integrate it all, but the website is very easy to maintain as well.
Sarah, this is John. How many licenses do we have? Is there enough that we can invite our staff to use this site as well, or?
I can add anybody as a guest user. So, you know, if you have other staff members you want to be added to be able to upload or download materials, just send me their information. You know, I'm going to ask that come from the members. You know, that if somebody reaches out to me and says, I want access to the Gatton SharePoint site and they're not a member, I'm going to run that by the member and make sure that's okay. You know, and I will ask that if anybody leaves your organization to please let me know so I can take away their access. But we do have three licenses, and that's for Frank, Carlos, and I to be the admins of this site.
Okay, perfect.
Well, this is very exciting stuff, Sarah.
Thank you. So like I said, you'll be getting an invitation tomorrow. And if you have any issues logging in, let me know. And if you have anybody else from your organization you want added, let me know.
Great. All right. If there's no more questions for Sarah, then we'll go ahead and move on to agenda item 6B, Gatton dark fiber testing results and discussion of future testing.
Yeah, so for this handout, so we've been discussing the Gatton dark fiber, and as you all should be familiar with, the testing that we made last year, or I should say year before last, procedures to our technical guidelines or our handout within your packet called out as 6B. So if you could take a look at that, and what I want to speak to you today about is the fact that we have an opportunity coming up. The current maintenance contract will expire in June. And as we've previously discussed, we want to get in into the maintenance contract to get in dark fiber testing portion for the new RFP that goes out. The what we've ran into with our contractor that does this work right now is how long it's taken. There was a lessons learned process that came, you know, that came back to me and that I've worked on with them, and also with you know, speaking with Carlos and Sarah about this. And so the question has come up is, do we still want to make it necessary to provide the dark fiber strands with the power meter and the OTDR testing, basically, so you do one once a year and one, you do both of them once a year, but you don't do them at the same time. And the reason I ask that is because it's dark fiber. What we've done in the past in Gatton's history is the continuity test. Yes, we did have, I believe it was a squirrel chewed that wasn't caught in the continuity testing previously. That caused some issues, and it seems like we've been doing better since. But what I ran into is the fact that in order to, and what I am being told is, in order to do the separate on separate consecutive occasions, it's hard to do within a year as it stands today because of the manpower, the resources it takes. It seems to be, what I've also heard is that the power meter and the OTDR testing, if it's done once or if it's done at the same time, which would make them once annually, it would be easier to do and maybe a cost savings to Gatton. But so this is just a heads up. We'll discuss this further in the RFP process, but I wanted to get a feel for what the members thought about making any changes to this technical guideline now while we have the opportunity that we can implement into the RFP coming up, or if you want to leave it exactly the same. But I'll just tell you this, it's a large undertaking to do it this way because it involves thousands upon thousands of test shots on dark fiber. So any thoughts or questions? I would invite the maintenance contractor who's also, you know, attending the meeting to speak to this if they would care to. Chris, would you like to speak to what you've ran into in the field and what you've experienced in regards to this?
Yeah, this is Chris Gonzalez. So when we initially looked at all this dark fiber testing, the power meter test, I was estimating this to take maybe 6 to 7 months to complete. Obviously, it took much, much longer than anticipated. There was multiple issues we encountered, whether if it's access, mislabeling, not all the ANEs drop off from A to B to C, some of them split the strands up, you know, having to re-referencing because one site may be SCs, other may be LCs, so we have to go back, re-reference. And my thoughts are, if trying to do the power meter testing and the sweeping separate in 1 year, it would involve an actual third technician to begin, and let's call it month six, to start the sweeping itself, which we know obviously would incur more cost. Technically, originally when this all started, dark fiber sweeping, it was one technician twice a year. That's enough time for us to be able to sweep everything twice a year. Once we added the power meter testing, it dedicated a second technician, you know, who's very familiar with all the sites, trying to get access with, you know, pre-testing without, you know, probing all the strands, make sure we didn't unplug anything that's active. And that took much longer. Now, after we've ironed out all the kinks, I still think it's going to take about 6 to 7 months to complete. But with that being said, the sweeping as well, which is another single dedicated person, would take another 6 months. So it'd be really close to try to squeeze both power meter testing and OTR sweeping, you know, separately in one fiscal year. Those are my thoughts on it. It's, you know, running back the second time around, we feel a lot more comfortable, but even then it's still going to be challenging because there's sites that are being added, sites that are being deleted. Still, you know, we're still encountering things on a daily basis out there.
So, yeah, so this is Frank. And just to follow up from what Chris said, you know, I put a lot of thought into this, and we've held meetings, and a lot of discussion has gone into this. And I mean, you know, even though I'm not in favor of it, you have to think about this testing the way it is as being an all day, everyday thing. It happens every day. And, you know, what we're trying to fit into 1 year time frame for at least the cost that we had previously that we received previously was $50K. I see that going up no matter who the maintenance contractor is, who was awarded in the future. So we can get that captured. We can leave this the same, but I wouldn't recommend leaving as much testing going on our network as what we're doing currently.
This is Dane. How many deficiencies did we find in that 1 year?
So we just got our test results back, and we're wading through those, Dane. I mean, we received them in the last 2 to 3 weeks, so we're having to go through thousands of, you know, as far as the test shots themselves.
Where I stand on this is I'd like to see, you know, like kind of see where the value is in this. Did I hear you say we spent $50,000 in testing?
That's correct.
So I'd like to, you know, see how much we're putting up monetarily into the service that we're requesting and how many deficiencies we're getting out of it, and kind of a comparison to be able to drive toward a more informed decision. I don't know what anybody else thinks.
This is Jaime. I agree.
Yeah, this is Gary. I agree also. But part of the reason for this, I thought, was to get us some updated results on the website, because I know the current, you know, scan results are pretty darn old. I mean, that's one of the big driving factors for me, is making sure that we have at least, you know, ballpark numbers up there. Because I mean, you could speak to it better than I can, but how old are those shots up on the website?
Yeah, so you're correct, Gary. That's one of the reasons this is Frank. That's one of the items that, you know, the tech committee talked about, and how often we do this. And you're correct in that fact. And they are, so they've been uploaded now. The new ones have, so we're current, but you are correct. The ones that were previously up there are pretty old. We're pretty old.
So this is Bruce. This is for dark fiber, fiber that's not in use. How long has it been dark? And is it going to stay dark another that amount of time?
Yeah, so that's a good question too. It just depends. It depends on the ring and, you know, what the members use or don't use of their, you know, of their network rights fiber that's been assigned to them.
Well, I know this, Gary, again. I know that we're fixing to load up more of our fiber, so I'm not sure how much dark, eventually how much dark fiber until we start expanding the rings and getting full rings out there, how much dark fiber there's going to be out there. Now, once we start building out, you know, all the rings like the super rings and the A rings to where there's 192 strands, yeah, there's going to be a lot more dark fiber. So, that's something we need to take into consideration also. I mean, right now, dark fiber's, you know, allocations are going down, but eventually they're going to start skyrocketing probably.
This is Jaime. I do have a question, Frank. Can you remind me what our current state is for testing? It's OTDR twice a year. And
So this is Frank. Yeah, so it's testing of dark fiber strands involved testing with the power meter once annually and testing with the OTDR once annually for continuity on separate consecutive occasions.
That's the current contract.
That's the current technical guidelines.
Technical guidelines. So the future state is proposing that we combine those testing activities to happen concurrently which in theory should provide Gatton with savings because you're having to access sites less frequently.
Well, so what we're going to do is we're going to call this, the idea behind this is we're going to call this out, not only have it in the technical guidelines, but we're going to call it out as a deliverable within the RFP that goes out in June. So I thought it would be an appropriate time to visit this because, you know, it's and Dane spoke to this a little bit, which I understand how the deficiency report would help. It's just going to take a while to manufacture that and bring it to you. But when consideration of this, you know, it's bang for your buck as far as, you know, you got to look at risk and network. You got to look at, you know, the costs for doing this and also how long it takes. It's, yeah, I can tell you right now from all the test results that I have been able to review, it's a lot. And there is, you know, it's a, you know, the point of having it done within an annual time frame for both types of testing. Back-to-back is a long process, and, you know, I would never recommend this, but, it, you know, it's a thought you could keep in the back of your mind. This is almost something, because it's a daily occurrence that takes place out there, this is almost something you could have a different contractor or different RFP go out for. It's a job in itself. You know, it's that larger of an undertaking, in my opinion. I think it's vital to the network that we do test. You know, we went through the once annual continuity testing to now the once annual power meter testing and once annual OTDR testing. I just don't know if that's a little over the top for what, you know, for our fiber network. I know other fiber networks typically will just do the continuity test once annually. But, you know, it's up with Gatton if they want to reconsider what this takes, and we'll have to get some costs associated. You know, we'll get it back on our RFPs, but on the RFP responses, but we want to make sure we word this in the maintenance contract, which is, we'll be bringing that, you know, here in just a few months for review and process of getting it to an RFP.
Okay, but just so that I'm clear, the current maintenance contractor calls for both power meter and OTDR, but they don't take place at the same time.
That's correct.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Current, this is Sarah.
Our technical guidelines call for that, not the current. The contract itself does not, but yes, the contract itself calls for them to follow our technical guidelines. So it's kind of a catch 22 there. And what they did was they provided a proposal in light of the maintenance contract, not calling out what we changed the guidelines to.
I see.
Yes, this is Sarah. I just wanted to make a clarification that this was added to the technical guidelines after the maintenance contract was executed. So as Frank said, it is not included in the current maintenance contract.
Okay. And so the delta to the maintenance contract could be adding power meter testing to what's already in there of the OTDR testing?
Let's say that again, Jaime. Ask it again. I'm sorry.
So the maintenance, what is the maintenance contract have today in terms of testing the network? Is it just OTDR once a year?
Yep.
Okay.
So yeah, there would be I think that's what you said, Dale. So you broke up there for a second on me, but yeah, there was definitely going to be a cost to the, you know, to the awardee or who, you know, to the bids we receive, I would think. I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure this is going to be looked at as, I think you're going to be surprised what you get back on bids when you ask for this to be done in the next RFP. I think you're going to be surprised on the amounts, but we can address it then, but we need to make sure we're aware of the fact that it will be, I suspect to be a much larger amount for the maintenance bids that come in as a result of what we're asking them to do.
We got a bid for them to do power meter testing once a year. How much did they increase the, or what was their quote for that?
It was $50K for to do the power meter and OTDR once annually on separate occasions.
Well, but the OTDR was included in our specifications already, right?
Yes, called out in the maintenance contract.
Okay, so really we're talking about what it add power meter testing onto there.
That's correct.
Okay. But what they're finding is it's taking a lot longer to do that. So get the cost? I mean, can we ask, you know, one or, I don't know, to find out how much we're thinking the cost is going to go up and then factor that into whether we want to continue with an annual power meter testing or change it. I mean, because I don't have a problem if they want to do it at the same time. I mean, they're in there. That's no problem. It's just how much, what the cost is going to be to Gatton versus, like Bruce said, what the benefit's going to be. Do we need power meter testing on an annual basis? Do we need power meter testing on a biannual basis? That's where I think the point's going to be. You know, we want to have, you know, as up-to-date a records as we can possibly have without, you know, breaking the bank.
Yeah, so Gary, yeah, this is Frank. Yeah, so that's some very good points, and that's basically what I was trying to get at and get information, some feedback on. You really touched on it there because, number one, I've done some research and made some phone calls, and we'd probably be looking at twice the amount of that 50K, so it's probably going to be an additional estimate. You know, I would put a hypothesis out there of 100K in addition to what we typically spend on our maintenance contract. And then, yeah, that's basically what I'm after is, you know, is there a chance that we could save some costs there? And do you think it's worth it as a tech committee if we did the power meter and the OTDR at the exact same, you know, time and we did them once annually? Because you're already in the facility, you know, you're still going to have to use that additional resource because you're doing the power meter testing, but you don't have to do the sweeping with the OTR and then come back with the additional resource and do the testing all over again on the network at a different occasion. I mean, it seems to me it would almost be better to do this, you know, maybe as a, you know, once a year with both testing, or possibly once every 2 years, you know, with some kind of breakout of the type of testing. And we would want to line this up with the maintenance contract for when it ends also. So if the maintenance contract is good for 5 years, you have to think, and that's typically what it is, you have to think in terms of that 5 years, how many times we're going to be tested, if we're going to be OTDR tested once annually and then power meter tested once annually, and we're going to continue that for 5 straight years. You know, that's also cost associated, you know, so you're looking at 500K versus, you know, different means of possibly power testing and OTDR testing. Does that make sense?
All right. Is there any other discussion on this topic? What are the thoughts if, would we still need to do OTDR if we're doing power meter?
So I think if you get your power, if you get your power meter test, you've got to have continuity to do that. So I think you're okay with the power meter test, and the OTDR is just, you know, it's just basically showing continuity. So I think we'd be okay with power meter, but we just really need to consider, you know, maybe ramping this down a little bit or leaving it as is and being able to know that, you know, at some point we're going to have to speak to the board about it from a technical subcommittee standpoint, that there's going to be, you know, if you're looking at 100K times 5 years, what that cost may be by the once the bid goes out. And that's possible. That's just what I've been told from talking to various entities.
So it sounds like, per Dane's suggestion, we want to come back and discuss this some more, but perhaps yes. Network management could also come back and look at the different combinations of options, what it might look like if we were just to do power meter testing versus power meter testing and OTDR versus both, and what's to be gained by having both if you have power meter, which is essentially going to show you continuity.
Yes, and that's correct. And this is Frank again. And so one of the challenges with this one is we just got all all the testing in. So, you know, as far as doing the deficiencies or looking at what we came out with and what needs to be fixed, you know, there's still that part of the aspect, and what was fixed on site at the time. We're still going through all of that. So it's going to take a little while to do that. And then at the same time, this is a challenging topic to bring to the tech committee, because, you know, some people have strong recommendations that it sticks to the way it is right now. Some people are more flexible. So, you know, I'm looking for more of a feedback. And yes, I will bring more information to you as we are able to go through the test results of the deficiencies. And I'll have that to you. I don't know if I'll have it by the next tech committee meeting, but it'll be coming soon. And the important part is that I get it to you soon enough for you to make have time to make a decision to go forward before we start the RFP process or start construction, the RFP itself. That make sense?
Yeah, it does.
Okay. I'll be back.
All right.
Does anyone else have anything they'd like to discuss on the dark fiber testing topic? Alrighty then, let's move into agenda item 6C, seeking recommendation for update to GATT and technical guidelines.
Okay, since most of you should be aware, if not, I'll make all of you aware that the 288 tube configuration and placement for use on Gatton was approved in the previous board meeting. So what this basically does is this covers our technical guidelines aspect of that. So 6C in your handouts is a illustration of what changes we're recommending to the technical guidelines. So if you'll see it in the technical guidelines 1.1.2, we've listed any new fiber installation, including permanent repairs, shall be placed at 192 count fiber on all rings. And it says unless otherwise approved by the Gatton board. So it's not much of a change there, but we're saying, yeah, that we're committing to a 288. And then below that, what we've got there at the bottom of page 2 is the breakout of the single mode armored 288 fiber as approved by the board. And we need to get approval on this. So I wanted to see if anybody had any objections or additions or thoughts that may need to go into this in consideration of it.
This is Jaime. I don't really see any issues with this. I mean, the way I read it, since we show a 192 and a 288 configuration, it kind of leads me to believe that we have two options, the default option being the 192 because of what you listed in section B above, but also kind of hints that there is some 288 in the network.
Any other comments or questions? And I mean, you might jar my memory on this, but if I'm not mistaken, can this be approved by the technical subcommittee?
I think we've always taken it to the board, but I want to have the tech committee's buy-in on it.
Okay.
All right, if there's no further discussion, I'd like to make a motion to approve the amendments to the technical guidelines as presented.
This is Dane, second.
It's been moved and seconded. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, Sarah, could you lead us through the roll call vote?
Gary Wiesman.
Aye.
Steve Pyle.
Aye.
Jaime Guerra.
Aye.
Dane Herbat.
Aye.
Bruce Hermes. John Cole Morgan.
Aye.
Bruce, are you muted?
He shows to be not muted.
Regardless, we still had a quorum voting aye, so the motion passes.
Okay, thank you. This is Jaime again. I'd like to, from 6D, 6E, and 6F into executive session. So the time now is 2:25 p.m., and I'd like us to adjourn to executive section under Texas Government Code 418.181 and Texas Government Code 551.089. This is Jaime, and the time is 2:59 p.m., and we are reconvening the technical subcommittee back in open session. We left off with agenda item 6D. Appears to be no action item for us at this time. Agenda item 6E, seeking recommendation for 288 count B2S Cyrus 1 cable replacement. I will entertain any motions. All right, this is Jaime. I motion we recommend for board approval 288 count B2S Cyrus 1 cable replacement.
This is Dane, second.
It's been motioned and seconded. Is there any further discussion?
Do we have the cost for that cable and the installation?
Network management, do we have a cost for 6E?
Carlos, you want to call that out? It's not really relevant to the tech committee, but I guess they, you know, just to make sure.
Yes, just a second, gentlemen. We do have it, and I mean, the cost of replacing that is $75,190.50, with a has a 20% contingency.
Thank you.
Any further discussion? Hearing none. Sarah, could you lead us through the roll call vote?
This is Sarah. I'm noting for the record that Gary just rejoined the meeting, so I will call the roll for the vote. Gary Wiesman. This is for the seeking recommendation for a 288 count B2 South Cyrus 1 cable replacement at a cost of $75. So I'm calling the roll for the vote. On. Yeah.
Aye.
Steve Pyle.
Aye.
Jaime Guerra.
Aye.
Dane Herbat.
Aye.
Bruce Hermes.
Aye.
John Colmorgan.
Aye.
That is a unanimous approval.
Thank you. Agenda item 6F, we are going to continue discussing this project at the next tech committee meeting. We've already done agenda item 7, our executive session. So we will confirm the agenda item number 8 will confirm the date, time, and location for the next technical subcommittee meeting as November 17th, 2020, 1:30 p.m. via teleconference. This meeting is adjourned at 3:02 p.m.